Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
The issue of transgenderism seems to be a recent phenomenon, but is it? It seems like the floodgates of perversion have been opened wide since the June 2015 Obergefell marriage decision. After the 2004 re-election of George Bush, homosexual and transgender activists joined forces to push through their now common goal of legitimizing homosexuality and transgenderism. But a closer look at transgenderism shows a different history, as far as it's not a recent phenomenon. My guest today is Denise Schick. She's the author of My Daddy's Secret, When Hope Seems Lost, and Understanding Gender Confusion. She serves on the Academic Council of the International Children's Rights Institute and directs Help for Families Ministry. Thanks, Denise, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What's some of your back? Give us a little bit of your background and what led you to begin the Help for Families Ministry, and just what is that ministry?
Now, when I was 9 years old, my father had shared with me his secret of wanting to become a woman. And so, obviously, my life had taken a drastic change, and many more changes yet would happen as I lived this journey out, having a father that identified as being a woman. One of the things that was so sad as being a child is understanding that there wasn't anybody or anywhere for our family to go, for my dad or for my mom, you know, any of us that understood, somebody that understood what this was like.
Right.
And the grieving process that's involved in so many different levels of pain, emotional pain, loss, and struggles that go on with this. So that's why Help for Families was developed, to give families a place to come to.
To help them understand what they're going through and some of what, why this is happening, why their feelings are as they are, things like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Well,
mm-hmm.
you,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, you definitely, with your past experience, you are the, you know, one of the, is there any other ministry that does that? I can't think of any other ministry that deals with transgenderism in that way. There are ministries that deal with homosexuality.
Well, yeah. As far as I know, this past summer, I was actually told that we were still the only ministry in the United States that focuses solely on the transgender issue.
Wow. And that is becoming more and more prevalent. There's no question about that, as we're seeing this with the Obama administration pushing it and such as that. It's just tragic with them targeting the kids.
Mm.
An article you wrote was recently published in The Federalist. You opened the article with this statement: "I feel a bit like Fox Mulder from Television's X-Files. The huge alien mothership has finally descended and is hovering over New York City. The stunned masses stare up in wonder and terror." Why did you start off that way, with that statement?
Well, because I feel like I'm in a totally different world, you know. But it is it's a world of another dimension, mm-hmm. that I don't recognize at all. We have lost our total senses of what is being true to self. What is gender? What is sex? You know, what is the sex that somebody is born? It just honestly feels like a different world that we're living in. And I know that that's what the culture is creating as far as the LGBT culture and what they are trying to cultivate. And it just, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I cannot believe when I think back to being 9 years old, I never would have thought that I would be seeing this in my lifetime.
Right. And in your situation, it was something that was really unheard of back then. And, you know, with someone who wanted to be the opposite sex. And it's just, you know, as you said, it's a whole new world now. With the floodgates opening, and they seem to have been open wide since the Supreme Court ruling last year concerning marriage, and the Obama administration jumping on board 100%, and that has definitely created a scenario in this country that kids are being misled.
Yes.
And opening the door for them to identify as the opposite sex.
Yeah, and the sad part is that we don't even know as a society how this is going to affect us in
exactly.
the years ahead, in the generations that are children right now.
Right.
The consequences from this.
And the same thing with the homosexual issue. And then you add this transgender component where they're actually taking steps, either taking the hormone treatments or actually going through sex change surgeries, things that can never be reversed.
Right.
So to me, this is even more tragic than the homosexual issue. You say in the article that transgenderism is no longer on the cultural fringe, and you bring up, you know, Bruce Jenner, who now goes by Caitlyn, and you say if it can happen to a cultural icon, a macho Olympic gold medal winner, then it must not be quite as strange as we thought. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing Bruce Jenner being used as the poster child of transgenderism.
Yeah, somebody that we, you know, all look up to. I mean, a man of such power and talent.
Mm-hmm. And now he says, well, he was always questioning his, even when he was in the Olympics, he was questioning his sexuality. Talked about he wore some women's garments. I can't remember all the details when he was actually running in the, you know, participating in the Olympics. But, you know, what kind of message does that send kids? It sends kids a message that if Bruce Jenner can do this, then it's okay for me to question my sexuality, or, you know, for the kids to question their sexuality, and it's okay for them to go through a sex change operation.
Right.
You know, to present themselves as the opposite sex. Give us some of the reaction that you've gotten from the Bruce Jenner transition. You know, as you go around the country ministering, how do you, you know, how are people responding to that?
Well, you know, people are responding. First, initially, when this came out, we had a pouring out of phone calls from family members because they were just feeling like, what's going on? You know, they were feeling so overwhelmed with grief and sadness and seeing what the acceptance and how this was all portrayed with him. So I think it's remembering that the families that have loved ones that struggle with this or identify or have had sex reassignment surgery, how this impacts them.
Right.
And then you have the person that struggles with this. And, of course, you know, idolizing Bruce, and again, because of who he is and what he's accomplished.
Exactly.
That, well, you know, he's doing this, and so it can bring about feelings for the individual to think, well, he's, you know, everybody's accepting this with him. So the less, feeling less shame, if there was shame that was attached to somebody that struggled with this, feeling more glorified or newsworthy. The camera's kind of going off, you know, that if I come out, everybody's going to be in support and possibly a lot of, you know, false ideas of what that support looks like. The one thing that I think is important to remember about Bruce is that he hasn't had actually the bottom surgery.
Okay.
And so, you know, a lot of folks, we don't see that because we see the newspaper and we see the pictures of him.
Right.
And this is something that I think is a growing trend. Now, it used to be gender dysphoria was somebody that was generally emotionally distressed about their biological sex.
Right, right.
To where the men, some men would do what they could to possibly cut off, you know, some body parts in that distress. And so for Bruce or others that aren't at that type of distress, it's like having the bottom part, it just isn't that what has generally been described as gender dysphoric. It would have been something where we thought of somebody as being a cross-dresser or a transvestite, somebody that had received an emotional high or relief through the material, through the clothing, or through looking like a woman.
So unless they actually, so he could not be diagnosed, shall we use that word, with gender dysphoria because he has not gone through the entire operation as far as he does.
Somebody today, and I say today because of professionals and the different things that we see going on there, you know, could say that he's gender dysphoric. In the past, it would be described as somebody being emotionally disturbed and really wanting that body part removed.
Okay.
And so I'm seeing the culture actually cultivate people differently, describe or put them under different labels. For somebody that maybe they just cross-dress or they are more along the lines of being described as a transvestite or such. Everybody's going underneath the transgender umbrella. It's like it's the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah,
and that's
for sure.
Where we need to be concerned, especially with our children, you know, because they're going underneath this label and they don't even realize the consequences.
Exactly, and more and more kids. I mean, in schools, you know, schools, when parents approach them and asking them what they're, you know, if there's a transgender student, a student who identifies as transgender, and the school wants to open the bathroom, or has an unofficial policy which opens the bathroom, the girls' bathroom and the girls' shower room to the boys who identify as transgender. and the parents are upset. In the school, many times the school will come back and say, well, the kids don't have a problem. Now, do you think that's, you know, it's going to vary from school district to school district, but do you think that is the case where kids, where young ladies don't mind if there's a male in their bathroom or taking a shower with them?
Yeah, I think that we have a percentage of peers that are more and more accepting of this. However, for those that are not or are uncomfortable
right.
as a girl with these situations, and I know this happens.
Which, by the way, the ones who are uncomfortable, they're the normal ones. They're the normal ones
that don't, yeah, they're just
yeah.
saying, I want my privacy.
Exactly.
I don't want to see the body parts of a boy or,
right.
you know, that. But with these situations, one has to ask when you're hearing, oh, they're accepting of this, they're accepting, who's going to speak against it because of the bullyism coming at them?
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Now, in your article, you were talking about some of the history. It was interesting because what you're basically saying is this is just a normal outgrowth, you know, in a nutshell, what you're saying is a normal outgrowth of the sexual revolution. Well, give us a little bit of info on that and Alfred Kinsey's part in all this.
Well, I think, you know, when we look back at the sexual revolution in the 60s, of course, you know, the drugs and the free sex and everything was natural and fun, you know,
yeah.
or described in that manner. So we've gone from birth control pills, you think back to abortions, all of these type of things that, of course, you know, that was, you can have unprotective sex and get pregnant and be rid of the baby
yeah.
if one
yeah.
wants to. So we have those messages, how the percentage of people, young people that were virgins upon their wedding day. I mean, it's nothing anymore for a girl and a guy to be living together.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
nobody bats an eye.
Yeah, I was shocked by the statistic in your article. It says in the 1950s, prior to the introduction of contraceptive pills, 60% of women were still virgins on their wedding day. By the late 70s, that figure had dropped to 20%
mm-hmm.
who were still virgins on their wedding day. That is an astounding difference because sex was viewed as you're saying, natural and fun, and that there were no
uh-huh.
consequences because of the introduction of the contraceptive pills. It just became
uh-huh.
a game. It just became a game, and
yes.
it's not. It's not a game.
No.
So Alfred Kinsey, he was back in what, the late 40s or early
yeah.
50s, can't remember
yeah.
which,
uh-huh.
where he wrote a couple, or released a couple, supposedly scientific studies that pretty much created the situation for Playboy to start, you know, their magazine and all such as that, and then opening the door to sexual revolution. So he's actually played a part in this also, the transgender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we think about the colleges, you know, when it comes to the psych classes, and I know this
oh,
from
yeah.
taking psych classes in the last couple of years, I realized that these men, that there were, you know, offerings that gave with the counseling in the human mind, but there was a lot of harmful and things that were done to children and to babies to see how they sexually respond. So we don't hear about the negativity or what people had actually gone through
by the individuals that are
actually praised in our liberal colleges on the psychology.
Right. And when you read about some of those experiments that took place, what was on Table 54, I believe that was with the children.
Yes.
What happened there was child abuse. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you're saying, isn't there a Indiana University in Indiana? Don't they have an Alfred Kinsey research institution or something
mm-hmm.
like that named after him? And
they have, yeah.
Yeah, and they totally ignore, like you're saying, they totally ignore what actually took place in those experiments to come up with the studies that he did. Yeah. Sex abuse of children and adults.
Yeah, I mean, that was, and granted, that's as well, to me, that's the parents, you know, that were responsible too for allowing
true.
Their children in those circumstances
that's
that were aware of it.
Right, that's quite true. You know, that's being all covered up as far as what actually took place with the Kinsey studies, and he's being immortalized, I guess the word I could use,
mm-hmm.
because of those studies that he did. That was early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
yeah.
sexual revolution was starting in the 60s. And then we have the Stonewall Rebellion in 69. And that's when, at that point, homosexuals pretty much came out of the closet and increasingly tried to have their lifestyle viewed as normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward to, you know, there's so much has happened in their efforts to normalize the homosexual lifestyle. And And if I remember it correctly, it used to be the homosexuals thought transgenders were a little bit off.
Yes.
And can you give us a little bit of information on that?
Yeah. They used to not want, you know, they didn't want to be connected to those that identified as transgender. And I had seen this happen for 6 years when I was involved in some Senate and House hearings and how that was kind of played out. But what I noticed was in the last few years mm-hmm. of these hearings was more of an acceptance, more of the homosexuals, those that identify as being homosexual. And I don't know if this had anything to do with it or not, but one of my thoughts were, you know, you've got a couple that identifies as being homosexual.
Uh-huh.
And so then all of a sudden you have one that transitions, you know, into a transgender, identifying in that way. But their love for that other person, you know, where they stay together as a couple,
right?
When truly they're really still the same biological sex.
Exactly.
Because you can't change their chromosomes or their DNA
and
all of that.
And that's an important factor. You cannot, no matter what you do to your body, you're still who you were born as.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't change. I mean, just because my dad, you know, had assumed under the role of Becky and looked like an old lady and lived that life, if somebody would have done the DNA, I mean, you cannot, if we're going to throw science out the window, then we might as well throw every biological medical book that is out there in our colleges and in our universities.
True.
We can't just pick and choose what biology we're going to believe and what we're not.
Yeah. That's true. Although, you know, they're doing that to the Bible, so I guess they figure they do that to science. But again, they'll do whatever they feel they have to do to legitimize their social agenda, and that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're intent on trying to force everyone to accept them, and if need be, they'll use the force of law to do so. You know, so now we're confronted as a nation with the phenomena that we have with the transgenderism. And you were saying that you had attended some of the hearings in the...
Yeah, there were some Senate and House hearings for Annapolis, Maryland, that
okay.
I was involved in a few years back for 6 years. And I believe it's been 2 years this past May where we had lost, you know. So for 6 years of that, you know, going and saying to them, find some, help us to help our loved ones.
Right. But,
you know, when I had men that had said to me specifically, how are we supposed to fight the very thing that we don't want to give in to when our government
uh-huh.
is encouraging and doing everything that they can
wow.
to put us, you know, in that closet,
right.
in that dark
it
room.
Normalizes. Wow.
And so this is coming from individuals that struggle with this and even seem like the government is working against what they really want and making mm-hmm. it too easy.
Because they're listening to the activists who have an
yeah.
agenda. And I've said for many years that homosexual activists don't necessarily speak for the average homosexual, average person who identifies as homosexual. And for me, what you're saying, the same thing with the transgender issue. The transgender
yeah.
activists don't necessarily identify with those who are struggling with this and who don't want to give into it.
No, it's almost like two different categories.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about activists or somebody's loved one that just is really struggling or identifying
right.
in this way
right.
and wanting to move back forward in the identity that they are.
Wow. But yet, in the case of Maryland, I mean, they did it. I know you guys fought that for years and years. Unfortunately, in Maryland, Annapolis is located in a pretty conservative part of Maryland. But
mm-hmm.
then again,
right next to D.C.
D.C., and then there's Baltimore. And yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it really tough. That's not good. So what would you recommend to schools or to school board members who are, oh, I want to back up real quick, though. In response to your article there that was printed in Federalist, an eighth grader wrote her response, and Huffington Post posted that. And how
uh-huh.
did the eighth grader respond to your article? And what kind of response have you gotten from the article as a whole?
Well, the article with the person that had wrote back was a person that identifies as being transgender,
uh-huh.
and he had wrote comments about his daughter, you know, at the table, and basically that her life is going well, and was mortified by my articles and when I talk about my personal experience and such. And so saying that, I have actually just turned in a rebuttal
okay. uh-huh.
to a publication and am waiting to hear from them. I know they are interested, and they just asked me to work on one area, so that was just sent in this morning. So we will, you know, we'll see on that. But the article in whole, you know, it's been, it was published through the Huffington Post, as you said, which is a very secular world.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, of course, there was a lot of praise, you know, for this article and for the writer and
for the eighth
for
grader.
The young girl. And
They didn't like your article, I take it.
No. It sadly seems, you know, like I'm becoming more and more disliked, and, you know, that they're going to do what they're going to do, and I'm going to do what I feel called to do.
Because
it is not a mischief or hate. You know, it's out of understanding the pain that our loved ones and the families go through.
Yeah, for sure. And you have to. I mean, their intention is to silence you because they don't like the message. They're going after the messenger. And since you are the only ministry in the nation that ministers to the families of transgenders and to transgenders who don't want those feelings, you have to stick with it for sure. Again, we see the whole all the tactics being used that the homosexual activists used. We see that in the transgender issue right now. And with a push in the schools where more and more kids, and I won't say more and more, there are kids who increasingly identify as transgender and demand that they be able to use the bathroom of the opposite sex, of the sex that they identify with. And we have a situation here in Pennsylvania, just south of here, that the school is being sued because three students who identify as transgender. I always find this interesting. It's usually the seniors who do this, who sue schools over either the homosexual issue or transgender issue. In the case, it's the same case here in PA right now. But they're demanding to be allowed to use the bathrooms and shower rooms of their choice. So what recommendation would you have to a school board member in that situation?
You know, I think and this is getting harder because our schools are not only have, you know, teachers and such that identify in these ways, but our school boards, as well, I think parents need to pay attention on who's on their school board and what do they stand for, and to take the time to vote and to help who they believe would best serve, you know, their children.
Yeah.
So that makes it really difficult if you've got a board member or board members, you know, that are LGBT embracing in these situations. What I would say that I wish the school boards would have done and would do would be the very thing that I think back to the first meeting, one of the first meetings that we had in Maryland, and when it was a Senate hearing, and there was an individual that had proclaimed that he was intersex. And the senator actually said, "What is intersex?" I'm thinking, you got to be kidding. You're not even educated about this, what it is. You have a computer in front of you, and instead of looking it up, had taken this person's definition of intersex, and it is not intersex. You know, intersex is something that's biological,
right.
That is something that happens through birth,
right?
And that was not the definition it was going to. So become educated, know what the differences are, you know what gender dysphoric means, and as well as, you know, somebody that really isn't gender dysphoric, that's just rebellion, or possibly just really looking for their identity.
Yeah.
All of us do as we become teenagers and trying to figure out who we are.
Yeah.
So I think we've gone so far of doing everything wrong and not investigating and doing this in a right way that it almost just, it's really difficult to bring back those reins.
Yeah, for sure. As we've said, as this door is open wider and wider, more kids who are easily influenced, whether they want to admit it or not, and they see this as the latest rage, the latest trend, you know, they may jump on the bandwagon, not realizing that the decisions they make as far as the hormone treatments and even the hormone treatments themselves can leave them sterile to where they, you know, once they become, they understand down the road what they're doing is wrong, it's too late for them as far as their ability to have children in the future. You know, and that's not even getting to the so-called sex change operation, which, as you pointed out, it's impossible because the chromosomes do not change. And, again, it's our kids who are being treated, used. I guess the word used is better.
Yes.
You know, being used as guinea pigs in this great social experiment. Do you think some of this has to do with the number of broken families we have in this country where kids are trying to fit in somewhere?
I think, you know, whether the families are where there's divorce or whether, with, you know, mom and dads aren't together or never married, that may have something to do with it. But, you know, this happens out of kids that are born, raised with a steady marriage,
that's,
you know,
true.
But some of that may play out because of them looking for their identity or disconnecting with the father or,
uh-huh,
you know,
yeah,
the mother in some way, some type of attachment or attunement,
yeah,
issues there. So I wouldn't say, you know, just broken people that have broken marriages or relationships of that. I think we have to look at this as the culture. You know, these kids are going to school and they're being immersed in this stuff.
Yeah,
and when you've got
true.
It starting at kindergarten and first grade, what did you do at kindergarten and first grade? You know, I was like, drawing, playing and ring around the posy,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
exactly.
things like that. And now
yeah.
we're forcing them to learn about gender. Oh, what
yeah.
sex are you?
Yeah.
You know, asking a first grader, come on.
We're stealing our children's childhood is what we're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. How can folks contact you if they have additional questions on this
they
issue?
They can contact us on the website, which is help4families.com. And our phone number and email and contact information is all there, as well as we have a Facebook page under Help for Families Ministry.
Okay, so it's help in the number 4families.com, mm-hmm. or they can find you on Facebook.
Right.
Okay, and I do encourage folks to do this because this is becoming more and more of an issue. And if you have children in school, be very, you know, just know what the school district policy is when it comes to boys and girls restrooms or girls and boys restrooms. Just know what the policy is and protect your kids. That's the main thing.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to stand up.
Absolutely, because if you don't stand up for your kids, no one else will. That's just basically the way it is nowadays. So, Denise, thank you so much for your ministry, and keep writing those good articles. And
thank you.
Just push back on the ones who don't agree with you because they're in the wrong. And we need to hear more from you. So
thank you so much, Diane.
You take care.
You
okay.
too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.